Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, in Luke 17, verse 12, the well-known account is given of Jesus meeting 10 men who were lepers, and those 10 men stood at a great distance from him as they shouted, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." Well, in response to their passionate request, Jesus told them to go show themselves to the priest. And of course, if you know anything about biblical history and Old Testament history, it was only the priest that could declare a leper cleansed in those days. And then the Bible says in Luke 17:17, as they went, that is, as these 10 lepers went, they were healed. Well, if you remember the rest of the story, only one of the 10 turned back to thank Jesus for his incredible act of love. And to that one thankful person, Jesus said this, "Were not 10 cleansed? Well, where are the other 9? Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you know anything about last week, 3 UCLA basketball players were held in China for theft while on an exhibition trip to that country, and they were released back to the United States as a result of President Trump's efforts while meeting with the Chinese president on the president's foreign trip. And one of those players' dads demeaned the president's efforts, stating that the release was the result of nothing the president actually did. Well, President Trump lashed out at LeVar Ball, who is the father of LiAngelo Ball, for a second time on Sunday, calling the father ungrateful after he appeared not to want to give the president any credit at all for his son's release, when in actuality the president spoke with the Chinese president about that. Here's what our president said. Quote, "Shoplifting is a very big deal in China, as it should be. 5 to 10 years in jail, but not to Father LeVar. Should have gotten his son out during my next trip to China instead. China told them why they were released. Very ungrateful," end quote. Earlier, President Trump had hit out at the father, Father Ball, for being unaccepting of what he had done on his son's behalf and downplaying the significance of the charges the freshman was accused of committing. And the president, in another tweet, said, "I should have just left them in jail." Well, with that, I want to welcome you to Stand in the Gap Today. I am Dave Kistler. I'm joined today by the American Pastors Network President Sam Rohr, who is, of course, a regular co-host on this program. Friends, this is Thanksgiving week, a time set aside by presidential proclamation. All the way back in 1863, the president was Abraham Lincoln, and he said, "We want to set aside a day of thanksgiving to, quote, our beneficent father for his manifold blessings on us as a nation." So it's fitting and appropriate we talk about this topic in segment one. And Sam, I don't know about you, but I was angered when I heard LeVar Ball's comments, the father's comments. You heard the statement. You know it as well. We both heard this from the lips of the man who founded the college that we went to. And the statement was this: "When gratitude dies on the altar of a man's heart, that man is well nigh hopeless." I would love to have your thoughts, Sam, on what I think is an incredible display of partisan ingratitude on the part of LeVar Ball.
Well, Dave, when I heard that, and then I actually procured some of his actual quotes and comments. Again, I went back and looked at it. And I would say, yes, indeed, there was a heart of ungratefulness that was manifested by that father, LeVar Ball, for a couple of reasons. One, he made it clear that the president did nothing. He said, really, I did more than the president to get my boys released. He said, I had boots on the ground, and I was doing this, and I was doing that. And the one to thank is President Xi, the president of China, because he's the one who released them. I mean, Dave, that comment right there is a comment that is an ignorant comment, because that's not how things work. Yes, the president of China permitted that these people to be released, but he didn't have to. That's the point of it, and it was the president that was there. That was the catalyst that was worthy of a thankful heart from a father. But that wasn't there. The second thing I thought was interesting was that the president said, I should have left him there in jail, that shoplifting in China is a big deal. I actually thought that was pretty good.
I did too, Sam. You know, people criticize the president for it, but everybody I've talked to said that's exactly what I would have said if someone was that ungrateful after the president got his son out. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah, you know, because the father came back and I think manifested another wrong attitude. He said, quote, it wasn't a big deal, the shoplifting.
Really?
That's what he said. Quote, it wasn't a big deal because, he said, going on, being raised in South Central L.A., I've seen harsher things. And then he went on to talk about people being, you know, taken to jail and all that kind of thing over here. But he dismissed it. And he said it was no big deal anyways because the stuff that his kids stole, son stole and the other, they actually took back and they apologized for him. So they should be all overlooked. But at the same time, Dave, I found another thing was interesting. LeVar Ball is the owner of a brand of clothes called Big Baller Brand. And they sell, among other things, $500 tennis shoes. So this is not some cheap thing that he has. But in his CNN interview, he was able in this whole thing to get comments and plugs for his shoes and his product line three times in the CNN interview. So, Dave, I am not so sure that he was as much concerned about the president not giving credit as perhaps maybe getting credit for himself and selling his commercial line of goods. But in any event, he was ungrateful.
I tell you what, that is an entrepreneurial spirit, isn't it? For sure, to get a plug in for your shoes while you're being interviewed by CNN. Sam, I want to go to this because I think this is reflective of what's happening in our culture. Romans 1:21 says of those whom God's wrath rests upon, that the second step towards societal destruction in Romans 1 is a spirit of ingratitude. Here's the passage. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. That's step number one. Neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations. Their foolish heart was darkened, etc., etc. So is what we're seeing with LeVar Ball, is this, in your opinion, symptomatic, emblematic of what we're watching as a culture? My personal opinion is I think it is, and I'm going to give an illustration in a second, but I'd love to have your take on that.
Well, no, Dave, I think it is, and I think as a nation, and of course LeVar Ball is just an example here, but as a nation generally, I don't think we're at all grateful to God. How do I know that? Because with only a couple of percent of the people in this nation actually having a biblical worldview, meaning they know who God is as creator and the nature of man, if we don't understand that, Dave, we are not fundamentally grateful. We look to government and we look to our idols, our things that we put in our hands. We are not looking to God as a nation. It's symptomatic of a culture.
Well, I agree. And Sam, you remember there was a time when you would hold the door open in a public, you know, venue for a woman or even for a group of people. They would always say, thank you. Well, I've done that all my life because my father would come out of the grave and get me if I didn't do that. He taught me to do that. But now you hardly ever hear anyone say thank you. Hmm. And that's tragic. I think it's a symptom of what you just said. Maybe when we get back from the break, we'll talk a little further about this. But friends, when we do get back from the break, we're definitely going to discuss the latest with the Roy Moore situation and other allegations that are emerging, not about him, but about those sitting on Capitol Hill who have sat in condemnation of Roy Moore. What's that all about? Don't miss this conversation after the timeout.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Jimmy DeYoung in Jerusalem, Israel. You often hear me on Stand in the Gap Today with Sam, Dave, and Gary. Guess what? We're all coming to Israel. Love to have you come and go with us. The dates are March the 7th through the 21st. That will include 10 days in Israel, 4 days in Petra, one of the most unique cities in all the world. If you need more information, the itinerary, the exact dates, also the information about cost, call this number, 423-825-6247. That's 423-825-6247. Ask for Jody. She can give you all the information as Stand in the Gap Today and Prophecy Today go host a tour to Israel. Next year in Jerusalem, we're looking forward to you being here with us.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website. AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Washington, D.C. has once again been turned on its head because in the last several hours, reports of allegations against Michigan Congressman John Conyers have surfaced. And we're going to get into all of that as well as with what's going on in Alabama with the Judge Roy Moore situation, the Alabama Senate race. But before we go there, Sam, I want to come back and ask you a question that I was not able to ask you in the final moments of the opening segment. And that is this. We're talking about gratitude and the spirit of ingratitude that seems to permeate our culture, so clearly illustrated by LeVar Ball, the father of this young man that was released because of the president's actions. UCLA basketball player stole something in China, held it incarcerated, could have served 5 to 10 years in prison. President gets him released, and the father, for whatever reason, whether it was to promote shamelessly his commercial goods or whatever, was just not thankful for what the president did. That permeates our culture. Sam, how do we change the culture, which is becoming increasingly unthankful? How do we change it back to what God wants it to be, what we all should be, and that is a society permeated by a spirit of gratitude?
Dave, I think in the simplest terms, and even yesterday on this program with Isaac Crockett and myself and a guest, we were talking about biblical worldview as compared to a postmodern or a secular worldview. And I described it very simply as that one view, a biblical worldview, is a God-centered worldview, and the other is a God-less worldview. Dave, that is as simple as you can get. If we have a fear of God, if we do as our coins tell us, in God we trust, well, if we do, we will be thankful because we will recognize that He created all and everything that we have came from Him. And then the logical next question is then what do we do with it? Well, then we do with those things He's given us, those things that glorify Him and bring honor and attention to God. Now, if we take God out of the picture, who are you left gratifying and thanking? Well, you may thank government, or you look in the mirror every day, you thank the person you see in the mirror. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. So it's either a God-centered view, or it's a God-less or God-rejected view. And that's about as simple as I can get, Dave. I think when our pilgrims came here and they were recognizing that it was God who protected them along the way, the first thing they did when they came was they knelt down and they thanked God for their arrival, even though many had died. All those things happened because they had a fear of God. If they had no fear of God, they would never have done that. And I would say we would not be here today because God would not have blessed the efforts, but he did bless those. So that's it, Dave. We take God out of the picture, we look in the mirror, and God is what we're looking in the mirror. We look at ourselves. That's about as simple as I could be on that.
Well, Sam, what you're saying is echoed very clearly in Romans 1, in the passage I quoted earlier. When they knew God, they glorified him not as God. Here's the result. Neither were thankful. So what you're saying, Sam, is 100% accurate. And by the way, that arrival of the pilgrims that we commemorate here in Thanksgiving week, there is a painting that hangs in the rotunda of the United States Capitol that depicts that arrival and them doing exactly what Sam Rohr said, and that is kneeling to thank God for his protection, even though a number of lives were lost en route, yet they knew God was the one that had brought them to these shores. And so when God is removed from the picture, then there is automatically following that a spirit of ingratitude or a spirit of incredible selfishness that looks at self and says, I'm the one that's accomplished this, when it's not me that's done it. It is God that's given us the strength, the ability, even to draw our next breath, much less accomplish all the other things that we accomplish and are able to do and enjoy in life. So Godless versus God-centered, I think that hits the nail squarely on the head. Well, I'd love to talk about this a little more, but I want to transition. Sam, yesterday, the first accuser that came out against Roy Moore, Lee Korfman, she finally granted an interview to the Today Show, and in essence, in that interview, she reiterated her initial accusations, but she provided no substantiated proof. Ms. Korfman, of course, and I'm not trying to demean her, but she does have in her background 3 divorces. She has a multiplicity of financial problems on her record. And something that was reported yesterday, and it was just reported, I've not seen substantiated proof of this, but evidently, according to the report that came out, she has accused a number of other men of unwanted physical advances, including several pastors, according to one report. Well, the fourth person who accused Judge Roy Moore is the only one, and I'm talking about Mrs. Nelson, who has anything remotely close to what could be called evidence. And I'm talking about the yearbook notes supposedly written by Roy Moore. We talked about this a little bit at the end of last week. Well, over the weekend, the Moore campaign again demanded the release of that yearbook for examination by forensics experts to determine the age of the ink, the validity of the supposed signature. And of course, over the weekend, Gloria Allred, who is the attorney for Mrs. Nelson, refused to release that note. And so, Sam, here we are with accusations against a man who has had a 40-year public service history with nothing like this that has ever showed up. And so it looks like to me, Sam, it's fairly simple. You've got this one piece of evidence. Why in heaven's name would Gloria Allred not release it when she's the one who used it in the initial press conference accusing Judge Moore?
Well, Dave, I think that goes to the heart of, and again, we can make accusations and we can formulate opinions on this, but I think her refusal to release that supposed evidence for an accurate review tells me that the interest here is not to actually prove, but it is the allegation. It's to keep alive the allegation until we go past the election. This now sticks up there as a charge. If there is an ability to prove or disprove, therefore to warrant this allegation or to discredit the allegation, or in this case, remove the indictment against Roy Moore or substantiate it, you could conclusively do that by evaluating this signature. So her refusal to do so, Dave, clearly says that justice is not the key. Doing what is right by either the accuser, this Mrs. Nelson, or by Judge Muir, the accused, that's not obviously the goal either. Otherwise, she would have released it. So it tells it's in a political, it's in a selfish, directed motivation. And of course, that's what raises the questions, why it's legitimate to look and say something really stinks about this thing when those who raise the accusation refuse to actually provide the evidence for an impartial evaluation. So this is what the fundamental thing underneath of it is, which says, all right, Roy Moore, and he stands up and says, I deny it. I go more to him and say, I believe you. Then I go to the other and I say, believe Mrs. Nelson, whose attorney will not allow the evidence to be evaluated.
Well, Sam, 2 Corinthians 13:1 says this is the criteria for verification of a thing in the mouth of two or three witnesses. Now, we're going to get a little technical without going too far into this, but the word witness is actually the Greek word martyrion. It is the word from which we get our English word martyr. Now, I know when I say the word martyr, immediately in people's minds, it conjures up the idea of someone dying for what they believe. And the word has come to mean that. It's kind of morphed into that over the centuries. But originally, the word martyrion, the Greek word, was merely a witness in a courtroom. Someone who stood up in a court of law and testified in behalf of the prosecution or defense and said what they had either seen or heard. Now, the word martyrion, martyr, has come to mean someone who died for something because the early church kept witnessing, testifying, almost in a legal sense, what they had seen and heard Jesus do. They were told to stop doing that. They refused to do so. They said, we can't help but speak the things we've seen and heard. And eventually, one by one, they begin to have to lay their life down. Hence, the word martyrion has come to mean someone who dies for something. But initially, Sam, it was a courtroom witness. So to use modern terminology, the word is primary source. If something is going to be proven or disproven, you have to have not a secondary source, not I heard someone that or talked to someone or someone told me they had seen this or heard this. You have to have the primary source as your witness. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that with respect to all of these allegations that are going on, both with respect to Judge Moore, more recently with Al Franken, because we did have a primary source step forward with a picture that verified he had actually groped her like she claimed. So talk about this witness and primary source concept that seems to be so absent in the Roy Moore situation.
Well, Dave, you've laid it out. In a court of law, you have to have confirmed, as you say, two or three witnesses. That goes all the way back into the old days. The fact of a kangaroo court, we would call it, or a false body that would come together just for the sake of accusing an innocent person and sending them to jail. We've known that's happened throughout history. And what our founders put in place were these things, which were reflected off biblical principles, saying if you have to be a visual witness to a crime, or there has to be some irrefutable proof, a DNA in the case of something that happened or something of that type we now bring in. But if you do not go to those objectively provable evidences, Dave, it's subjecture, and that's never sufficient anywhere through real law to accuse a man or to destroy a character or put somebody in jail.
Not biblically, not constitutionally, not legally is an accusation sufficient to implicate and convict someone. There must be substantiated proof. Well, I'd love to talk more about that. But friends, when we come back, it is the 1 year anniversary of President Trump's first year in office. How well has he done at fulfilling his promises? We're going to give him a report card grade after we return from the timeout.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, this month is the one-year anniversary of President Trump's election to be President of the United States. Of course, that occurred on November 8. Obviously, we understand he did not take office until January 20, but it's been 1 year since he was elected as of November 8 of this month. And so we thought we'd do a little bit of an analysis of the president's promises made versus promises kept and try to give him, at least I'm going to let Sam Rohrer give him, a grade as to how he has done in his first year. If you will remember, ladies and gentlemen, one of the president's most prominent promises during the campaign was the repeal and replacement of Obamacare. Well, that was attempted, but of course became stalled, and it's still stalled. We don't have a repeal or a replacement for it as of yet. The word is that's going to come up shortly after the first of the year. He also promised, though, the repeal of the infamous Johnson Amendment of the IRS tax code. And that was initiated via an executive order on May 4, or the National Day of Prayer of 2017. In fact, Sam, I remember I was standing on the West Plaza steps of the United States Capitol. My phone was shut off, but it began to buzz, and I kind of discreetly pulled it out of my pocket, looked down at it, and it said, even as we are speaking, as this text is being sent to you, the president is signing an executive order repealing the Johnson Amendment, which is the amendment in the tax code, not statutory law, but the tax law that said pastors could not be involved in that which is deemed, quote unquote, political. Now, of course, Congress has to enact legislation to make that permanent, but at least the president did what he said he was going to do. As well, he promised the building of a border wall. That wall, of course, is not yet complete, but the process is in place, and I've seen some of the proposed styles of wall that may be selected from, so he is working toward that. He promised also to move the U.S. Embassy from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv. And Sam, last week, you and I were in meetings together, along with several other pastors, where we learned that this is still very much on the table. He also campaigned on no transgenders in the military, and he, of course, has signed executive actions with respect to that. So the president has done a lot of what he promised he would do, some things he's not yet been able to fulfill. So, Sam, just generally speaking, how do you think the president's done in his first year?
Well, Dave, my opinion, I think the president has done, I would say he's attempted to do what he has said he would do, and he's done a very good job at doing that. And I think when you look to the performance of a president, you want to see how he leads. When we talk a little bit later about things we like or don't like, I don't like everything that the president has done, or always the way he conducts himself. But if I look to the policies involved, which ultimately is the responsibility of the president, the major constitutional duty, that is to enforce the laws of the land and to honor and uphold the Constitution. Now, if I use that as the basis of measurement, then you would have to conclude that he has done or attempted to do what he has said. All those areas, those things that you mentioned. The tax issue is one that's before the Congress now. That's another one that he had promised to pursue. Whether it happens or not, we have yet to find out. He did go after the repeal of Obamacare, a big issue, and we know what happened there. The Congress could not and would not, Republican Senate would not bring themselves, led by guys like John McCain and others, who just would not give the vote to make that happen. So he has been stymied in a lot of those. But on those issues of policy, those things to which he has said he would do, I think he has done marvelously well. Now, when it comes to foreign policy issues, how is he dealing with other nations? In my opinion, he has been bold. He has put the United States first, from his speeches before the United Nations to his interactions with the president of China or any other countries where he has gone. He has laid down the truth. And if he's had to poke his finger in his eye, he has. But he's told the truth. We've commented on a lot of those things. And he's, to me, I think, brought back a level of respect to the presidency on regard to courage and to the recognition that being a sovereign nation and putting your own nation first is what you ought to do. Frankly, Dave, that's what he was on this whole trip to the Far East. That's what he was telling every country he went to. You need to put yourself first. He said that in Vietnam. I'm glad for what you've done. That's what he said, really, all the countries he went to. So, Dave, he's been doing that, and I think done a good job at that part of it.
Sam, you know, sometimes you'll take a survey at a restaurant and they'll ask you a question like this. Were you mildly pleased? Were you moderately pleased? Were you extremely pleased with your experience at this restaurant? I know you've gone through that, as have I. So I want to play that game with you, and I want to go to the things the president has done about which you are extremely pleased. Just one item, and then I'm going to give you what I believe is the one item I'm most extremely pleased about. So let's do that, and we'll go through extremely, moderately, mildly, but the one thing to start with that you're most excited about the president's done.
Well, I think one area that I'm very pleased about is the appointment of judges, both in the middle court system as well as the ones in the Supreme Court. Those are permanent, ongoing markers. They are legacy positions, whereas they don't get very much attention, Dave. He has put extraordinarily good constitutional-directed, pro-life individuals, more than any president we think, well, probably anybody we've seen. I think that's extremely pleased in that area.
Well, I'm going to say this, Sam, and that would have been near the top of my list, if not at the top, were it not for this. In my opinion, the thing I'm most pleased about that our president has done is the fact, and you alluded to it earlier, he's made America and put America first. Okay, he talks about a strong sense of nationalism, love for America, wanting to protect America in foreign countries. You're right. I have not heard any president speak like he's spoken, you know, to the Chinese president in Vietnam. You know, that you folks are putting your country first. You should. It's your country. But I've got to put America first. So rather than apologizing for the United States, as President Obama did on every foreign trip he took, this president has placed America first and a strong sense of nationalism, national pride. I would say his comments about the national anthem and not taking a knee, I think all that factors in as subsets of what I am most excited about and pleased with, and that is putting America first. Let's move to the second category, moderately pleased. What is the thing that you are maybe not as excited as you are about the judges, but you're still pleased that the president's done this? What would that be?
I think I am moderately pleased, because this is in a tough spot, with the way of actually getting some of these policy issues passed. The reason I'm saying that is this. We know that he is in the swamp. We know that the president is opposed by the establishment, front and center and all the way around. We know that. However, I do think that there are a number of cases where he could have perhaps created a little bit more of a friendly attitude on the parts of some of the senators and House members with whom he's had to work. And I think he's laid down, he's thrown gas on the fire at times where there was a healing potentially possible. I think he took it the other direction. So I'm only mildly pleased, I suppose, with the way he has controlled himself in some respects relative to that.
Sam, I'm going to agree with you and concur. That would be what I am moderately pleased about, is the way he's conducted himself. I think he has done an admirable job. Some things I would do differently, so I'm only moderately pleased with the way he's tried to get policy through and the way he's gone about it with respect to his relationships with those on the Hill with whom he needs to work. So let's move to mildly pleased, the thing that, you know, you're probably, you're pleased, but you're not super excited about. What would that be? And I already know what mine is, but I want to hear yours first.
All right. Well, I could come back and say, Dave, I want to hear yours first, but I will answer. but I'll answer that. I think, and I think in this regard, the area that I'm displeased with is I believe that the incessant use of twittering.
Sam, you're reading my mind. Don't go there, my friend. You're reading my mind.
You know, I mean, there's been no question about it. There have been advantages to it. He has shaped the narrative, and every time he does it, there's a shaping of the narrative. But on many occasions, I think it would have been better had he just kept quiet and not done anything in those areas, because I believe it's kind of like picking a scab off of a healing wound that I'm not pleased about.
Well, it is the thing, though, about which I am mildly pleased, and it's for the same reason you stated. I think he has not necessarily helped himself by creating, you know, relationship issues with those that he really needs their support on some of the things. But the thing that makes me even remotely pleased about it is the fact that he has bypassed the media to go straight to the American people with his Twitter account. I think he just needs to be more judicious in how he goes about it and the things he says. So the thing, you know, that I'm mildly pleased about would be that. Sam, quickly, give our president a grade for his first year.
I'm going to give him a grade of B, because in some areas I would give an A minus, in some areas I would give a C. So I'm going to give a B.
Okay, I'm going to be a little more generous. I would give him a B plus for some of the same reasons. So we're pretty much reading off the same sheet of music. Well, friends, we're going to tie all this together on this Thanksgiving week set of programs when we come back from the break. Don't want you to miss it. We're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on with Congressman John Conyers, as well as a spirit of gratitude and why it's so important here in the United States at this particular time. Don't miss the conversation after this time out.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The Handy Guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Michigan Representative John Conyers, a Democrat and the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives, settled, according to allegations, a wrongful dismissal complaint in 2015 with a former employee who alleged she was fired because she would not, and this is a quote from the affidavits, succumb to his sexual advances. Documents from the complaint obtained by BuzzFeed News include 4 signed affidavits, 3 of which are notarized from former staff members. In other words, the affidavits are from former staff members who allege that Conyers, who was the ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, repeatedly made sexual advances toward female staff that included the following: request for sex acts, contacting and transporting other women with whom they believed Conyers was having affairs, caressing their hands and rubbing their legs and backs in public, and 4 people involved with the case verify the documents are authentic. And the documents also reveal this secret mechanism by which Congress has kept an unknown number of sexual harassment allegations secret. And of course, that process is the closely held method by which the alleged victims feel like they have no other option than to remain quiet and accept a settlement. As in this case, this woman says a settlement was offered to her by Conyers and she felt like she had to accept it. Now, Sam, let me ask you this. All of this is allegations. These are signed affidavits. There is all of this documentation out there. Does this in any way to you and in your mind prove that John Conyers is guilty, or is there much, much more that must surface for him to be proven guilty? Because we've talked a lot about innocent till proven guilty.
Well, Dave, as far as I have seen right now, there is not sufficient, in my opinion. Again, based on what I have seen, of course, these kinds of things are difficult. We talk about it. The discussion in the public square, commentary by news people, back and forth on blogs, on Facebook communication, all these kind of things. These are things that are, in essence, setting up a public grand jury without the protections of the truth and the rules by which you can produce evidentiary proof and all of that. And that's the problem with it. So even in this discussion here, and I think you asked the question, right, based on what I know. Well, based on what I know, I know very little. So the answer would be no. He's innocent until proven guilty. Now, would the other evidence come out and other people work on it? Answer is yes, it will. But again, that's back to what we've said from the beginning. This is about the protection of a legal process that is put in place in this country to protect the innocent against those who would raise false charges. And for those who would, government actually could use it with false witnesses to put somebody in jail, opposition candidates. That happens all around the world. I mean, we have a tremendous system protection here for justice-wise, and we must be extraordinarily careful that that is not damaged or harmed, or every person listening to this broadcast today will potentially stand without protections when accused by a government official or someone else who may not just like them at the moment. We have to be very, very careful about that, Dave.
Sam, I don't think you could have stated that any better. That has been my concern, is protecting above all things the process, the system that is ensconced in our legal framework that considers someone innocent until proven guilty. And as you so powerfully said, that kind of protection is not provided in governments and in countries around the world. All it takes is an accusation and someone goes and disappears, or they go to jail for years for something that they did not necessarily do. Before we went on air, Sam, we were talking briefly about the fact that when trust in our elected officials degenerates, and your concern, which is a concern I share, that with all these allegations out there that are swirling, some of which may ultimately prove to be definitively true, substantiated by proof, when all of that happens, Sam, the faith in the institution itself is undermined, and you have great concern about that, as do I. I would love for you to talk about that before we conclude the program.
Dave, I do, because I think everyone listening to this broadcast says, all right, how do I process? How do I process all of these increasing accusations, from people in Hollywood to people in elected office to now a Charlie Rose who worked for CBS, who I just got a note that CBS just fired him for the accusations, to accusations against whoever it may be. Dave, we only have one of two responses. If the system, legal system, justice system, does not prosecute the false accuser and penalize the false accuser, or if the system does not protect the innocent person who has been falsely accused, if that fails to happen, then what you have is what we're unfolding now. And we're left with two options. One, you just turn it all off and you become cynical and you say they're all a bunch of bums. They're all, who can we trust? And you walk away in cynicism. Or the other is you become angry, and angry at everybody. And Dave, that creates within a population of a nation the climate for revolution. It's the climate for reaction. And I would say that those who are trying to promote these things create the divisions. Then there are people there that are seeking to create division, who do not care about destroying somebody's character. What is their goal? Well, it may be a temporary political advancement, perhaps, but ultimately, Dave, it attacks and divides the unity of our nation. And when that happens, whether it be this nation or the nation of France or England or anywhere else, when a nation is divided, it will fall. It's as simple as that, and we have to be understanding these are tactics that we're seeing, and it's destroying. And as you said, if we lose the faith or the confidence in those who are in positions of leading, we will lose our nation, because all of our freedoms are based on trust and self-discipline of the individuals. And we're getting very, very close to that precipice, Dave.
Well, Sam, I want to say unequivocally, though I do believe the lid may be about to blow off of some of the hypocrisy that has dominated and has controlled Washington, D.C. I want it clearly understood, because I minister there. Sam, you know this to be the case. There are people on Capitol Hill that serve in Congress, both the House as well as in the Senate, what we call Congress. There are men and women there that love God with a passion. There are men and women there that are incredibly competent. There are people there that are of impeccable character. They don't get a lot of play time or airtime in the media, but they're there. What the media wants to focus on are those that are unethical, and there are more than the share of those up there on the Hill that need to be dealt with, but it is by no means all of them. And so this phrase you use that I've heard a lot, they're all bums, that's not true. And so what we need to do is let the justice system play out accurately, in a judicious way, dealing with those that are legitimate criminals. Those that are false accusers, as you said, Sam, need to be dealt with as well. There needs to be a penalty for them, so that the system itself, designed by our founders, brilliantly designed by our founders, can be maintained. Sam, I want you to take us to the throne of grace in prayer about this, because this is becoming an increasing concern to me, that the system that we have, unlike anything in the world, must not collapse. Otherwise, everybody loses.
Absolutely. Heavenly Father, we are thankful that we can be on the air today and communicating these things, that the heart of the matter of justice, Lord, is truth. That's what we put forward. We want to stand for truth. Lord, I would pray that those in positions of authority would fear God, uphold the truth, and do justly. We commit them into your care. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. We have another program tomorrow on this Thanksgiving week. Don't miss it. Join us at the same time. And until then, stand up for truth right where you are, because as the scripture says, the truth shall set you free.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.americanpastorsnetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.